Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, it's me again. And today I have Dr. Lodge McCammon with me, and so.
Greetings, everyone, world.
Say hi back, all right?
Yes.
Appreciate you being with us today.
I'm waiting for them to say hi.
Oh, okay. I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, so okay. move on. Next question.
Next question.
I'm so nervous.
All is good. So let's start by talking about you. Tell us a little bit about what you do, a little bit about your background, because I know that you taught you taught high school and you taught a university for a while. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about you. What do you do?
Yeah, so I was a high school teacher and I taught AP Economics and Civics at Wakefield High School, which is in North Raleigh. Go Wolverines. And I was there for a while and then I went back and got my PhD from NC State University in, I can't remember what year, 2008. I think I finished in 2008 and I got it in education, specifically curriculum development. And while I was getting my PhD, I worked a lot with training teachers, doing professional development, designing new types of curriculum or curricula, and doing quite a bit of traveling, actually, mostly around North Carolina. A few months ago, I had an opportunity to change up what it is that I'm doing, and now I'm kind of doing two different things. First, I'm working on an album. For the next 2 years, I'll be working on two different albums. I'm also a musician, and I grew up playing music. I started playing violin when I was 2 years old. And I did a lot of studio work growing up. My dad was a record producer in Chicago, so I was around music a lot. My mom was an orchestra director, so music was sort of my entire life. When I went back to school, I did my research for my PhD on music. It was called Chemistry to Music, and I took the eighth grade chemistry unit for North Carolina Standard Course of Study and created sort of an album about chemistry for eighth graders, so for eighth grade teachers to depart from the lecture style classroom and use lyrics and music in place of the traditional lecture. And I did a study looking at achievement and motivation, both increased when using music in the classroom, specifically chemistry. But a couple months ago, I had the opportunity to change what it is that I'm doing, and now I'm working on an album. About a 50-song album this year, one song about every state in the United States, probably 51 songs, because my friend Rob said to me the other day, man, you should do, after you get done with the 50th, you should do a 51st state about the United States.
Oh, excellent.
You know, which I thought was a really fantastic idea. But basically the idea is that I want to create about a three-minute song, modern tempos, that kind of thing, modern instruments somewhat, where the basic history, geography, and economic structure of the state is covered. And what I'm shooting for is to create these songs so that fourth grade students can sort of discover, because that's where many states across the country, that's where they first learn about their state history.
Right.
So hitting the fourth grade standards, but also up to eighth grade standards for most states as well. For example, Georgia, I'm working with a teacher named Jeff Woods tomorrow, close to Atlanta, with his eighth grade classes on integrating this new song that I wrote about Georgia called The Old South's End with his eighth grade classes.
Oh, excellent. Now I got to ask, because there's 50 of them, so how far are you?
I have completed 14 so far. If you want to check them out, all of the songs have videos that go along with them that are sort of a view into the recording process in sort of my little studio in my house. You can see how the songs unfold as you're listening to the song, which is kind of neat. So that's this year. That's part of what I'm doing this year. The other part is I'm doing quite a bit of traveling, working with teachers, not only helping them integrate music into the classroom, either whether it's social studies, English, science, or math, but also integrating concepts like flipped classroom teaching, being more efficient in lectures, how to engage students using very simple technology, those types of things. So I travel quite a bit doing that, helping teachers, working with teachers, all different levels and all different curriculum or content areas. And then thinking forward next year, you know, if I finish this 50 song thing, which I will finish it. But on deck for next year will be the 43 presidents in a row.
Oh, excellent.
So 2 years, 90, what did I say? 43, 93 songs. I think I can do it.
There you go. That's awesome. Look forward to hearing them because I love the state songs.
Thank you. What's your favorite one? Did you figure it out yet?
No, I haven't figured it out yet.
Okay. But one of the first four.
George is right there. I do have to tell you that. Yeah. But I'll go back and I'll shoot you an email because it's one of those very first ones that you did, and so I got to go back and find out and shoot that to you.
Nice.
One of the things that just as a note, it's funny because. I told you this morning, I feel like I've known you, but I've never met you because I've been using your videos to help share with teachers how to flip the classroom and using the model that you've created and that you've been sharing with teachers and teaching prospective teachers how to do this in the classroom. And kind of what I wanted to just kind of talk a little bit about is that your idea and concept using the whiteboards and the markers and the flip cameras and so forth, it seems to be about efficiency and making the teacher a little more efficient. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. You know, one of these secrets in education, which I'm trying to tell people, as many people as possible, about this secret, is that we are, many teachers, myself included, when I was in the classroom, highly, highly inefficient just because of what's happened with technology in the past, I don't know, 10 years, really, that, you know, if you have high-definition video cameras in our pockets, many of us do, or they can be checked out easily at a media center in our school, or they can be purchased online and it's like eBay for, you know, $30 for a decent high-definition camera. We live in that world. And what that means, what that world really is, or what that, I guess what those tools really allow us to be is much more efficient. And let me just break down a scenario for you that many teachers will, you know, we have responsibilities. Let's take a middle school science teacher, for example. And one of the responsibilities of this teacher is to deliver the content to their students in their way with their examples, you know, building those relationships. The students believe that the teacher knows their content and believe in their teacher. Now, the issue is that in the modern classroom that is growing, the class sizes are increasing, and the level of diversity in learning we have in the classroom is huge. We have students who struggle with their writing, you know, struggle with literacy, all the way up to students who are exceptionally bright. So how do we manage a classroom like that? And the concept of lecturing or delivering direct instruction, that information to a group of students like that, that is large, getting larger and very diverse, is no longer working. It worked maybe 60 years ago because students were highly invested in coming to school and listening to really, really knowledgeable adults. But those days are sort of over and we have to figure out how to be more efficient in our practice. And one of the ways is using these very simple digital tools that are in our pockets or that we can check out from our media center to record very condensed versions of that lecture or direct instruction. And what we're finding is that when a teacher does that, you know, the 60-minute lecture given in the classroom can be condensed to about a 10-minute video when recorded because you don't have behavior management issues, you don't have interruptions, you don't have all these things that just slow down the content. And the funny thing is why it's a secret is because we just think, okay, that's just the way it is. I lecture first period, I lecture the same thing second period, I lecture the same thing third period, each for an hour, when it just doesn't have to be that way. And if we think about it differently and just condense that 60-minute lecture to 10 minutes, that makes us extremely efficient and opens up an amazing amount of time for other things other than lecture that are going to engage that really bright student and that student that's struggling with literacy, because the lecture doesn't really engage either one of those students or many in between.
Yeah, it's easy to check out as a kid.
You probably just checked out now. That was way too long.
Oh, no. What?
Yeah, exactly.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. The point is that it is easy, you know, if someone's just lecturing, it is easy for a kid just to check out, and it looks like they're paying attention.
Right.
I was kind of king of that world
I'm doing that right now.
Yeah, thank you very much.
pretending to write, nodding my head.
Exactly.
Kids are very good at we're very good at this, too. We've been trained to pretend.
Trained to pretend. I like that. Yeah. That could be a T-shirt.
Trained to pretend. It's a little hard to say. It's kind of a tongue twister.
That's true. Let me ask you, because one of the neat things that you have with your videos is that you've posted videos of teachers using the whiteboards, teachers using the flipping the classroom model. You've posted kids interacting with the teachers and actually doing the videos themselves, mm-hmm. which is really cool.
Yeah.
But one of the neatest things is that you have adults who are teachers right now who evidently work with you and working with other prospective teachers, and they respond to the questions or the reasons why people can do it. And I just thought maybe we could just kind of share wherever that brainstorm came from. It was brilliant because you can use those then, because the questions that most people ask, you have a video for it.
Well, the brainstorm came from it from the same place as the brainstorm for flipping the classroom, because part of the inefficiency of the classroom. I mean, let's go back to first, second, and third period. So first period, you're giving your lecture, and you get the same questions from the students. You know, you get a bunch of questions, oh, I don't get it, or what? You know. And then second period, you get those same questions again. You're like, oh, my gosh, that first period asked that as well. And so third period, same thing. But it comes from wanting to help people first, you know, giving people the answers to the questions that they're most interested in, lowering the barrier to do this, because a lot of people just need their questions answered. A lot of them want to do this and they believe it. They just need to hear somebody explain a practical way to get around their particular issue. For example, the question about the two popular questions, I'm going to address the second one. The first one is, well, what if students don't have access to computers outside of the classroom?
Right,
this
right.
is not fair. This won't work. And a lot of the questions, what we found is that they start out questions, and then people answer them. You know, they start out and then they answer it in sort of like, this won't work because. And the second question is, what if students don't watch the video? That's a very popular, it's got like 30,000 views on YouTube. It's a very popular question. Or maybe more, I don't know, I haven't checked it today. So that particular question, Katie is the teacher that has done a lot of these frequently asked questions. I think she holds the market on frequently asked questions, or she controls the market frequently asked questions about flipping the classroom on YouTube. I think actually her flipping the classroom video is the first one that comes up.
It is.
And the TEDx video that we filmed, or that we didn't film at NC State, or that was filmed of us, is number two. And then her frequently asked questions are just sprinkled all throughout those pages,
right?
Based on their popularity. But that particular one, just hearing a teacher say, it's just like regular homework. You know, there are students who don't do your homework right now. What do you do about them? You know, it's
right.
the same answer. You're asking students to do something. If they don't do it, it doesn't really matter what it is. It's not like flipping the classroom is creating a problem. But anyway, so you've heard her answer. I don't
yes.
need to go. And you can search Katie Gimbar in that question if you'd like to hear that. I don't have to repeat it, which is nice. But it's just a way to help people, a scalable way to help people. I mean, if you look at those numbers, we've helped 30,000 people get over that question.
Exactly.
You know, as opposed to every single person you run into, they ask you that question, you're like, oh, my gosh. And then, you know, in a line, you just it's the same question after the same question. That's no fun. It goes back to that repeating yourself, and that is highly inefficient in the 21st century world.
Well, as a note, it's awesome that you decided to address it that way because, first of all, they're teachers or people who have taught working with people wanting to be teachers. And mm-hmm. so they can say, this is what we do.
Right.
And it works. Mm-hmm. And kudos. It's awesome. And that's why it's gotten 30,000 views. I do have to tell you that I've probably rewatched it.
Well, it doesn't, on YouTube, they don't allow that to count for multiple views.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
That's cool. I did not know
that.
They've
got some algorithm figured out.
That's
otherwise,
awesome.
Otherwise, every single one of my videos would have like 10 million views. I'd just stay up all night. Just gonna,
make it go viral yourself. I like that.
Yeah,
that's good.
Right, that's right.
Well, let's shift topics now. Let's talk a little bit about today. I attended a class where you were teaching teachers how to differentiate in the social studies classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, you were a high school social studies teacher. You taught economics, AP economics.
Mm-hmm. And civics, yep.
And
history.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So you taught the gambit, which is awesome. And thinking about your differentiation class, what would you say was your main message in that?
Well, there were really two messages.
I'm smiling. You can't see it, but it's funny.
There are really two messages. First, realize that the first activity we did was go around and share the differentiation activities that teachers are already doing. And they do all sorts of – they have all sorts of great ideas and amazing things. One of the main pieces – again, there are two, but the main one I wanted to take away from what they're already doing is that adding a level of rigor, if we think of something like Bloom's revised taxonomy that ends at the top with having students create something new. I don't believe that's the end of Bloom's revised taxonomy. I think there's rigor above that creation level and within it as well. So if I challenge my students to create some sort of graphical representation of a battle, for example,
okay.
You know, on a whiteboard. Here are some markers. Here's a whiteboard. I want you to draw the flow, how this battle happened and what the outcome was. So they start drawing this information and putting this together. It's a totally different assignment if I tell them, by the way, I'm going to have you come up to the front of the room. You're going to sit down in front of a camera. You're going to explain it to the camera. And then I'm going to publish that video to YouTube so we can share it with our class, with our educational community, and possibly millions of people in the world might see your video about that battle. That changes the paradigm of that assignment. So the first assignment was like, okay, we'll just draw this thing. The second was, holy cow, okay, yes, that's the world we live. I want this to be on YouTube, so it has to be really, really good. You know, it has to be accurate. It has to be, I guess, efficient, condensed. You know, I have to take this assignment much more seriously because of the possibility of a global audience. And that's what I was hoping they would take away from the first part, is that adding, they're doing all sorts of amazing and great things already, but just adding that level of rigor that's saying, this might be published for a global audience, and then also the level of rigor of creating something like that video of a student explaining that battle, and then having them watch it back, can be extremely rigorous. At first, it's disequilibrium, like, oh gosh, there's so many things I didn't like. But being able to know that, and going back and be like, okay, my next one's gonna be a lot better. That is a level of rigor we should hand our students with every single lesson. And I'm really, really excited about that. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, like any social studies teacher, time is the problem. Like, we could do all sorts of amazing differentiated instruction if we had unlimited time. I could spend an entire semester on the Civil War,
right,
and do everything I could possibly think of. We could, you know, like I could do that, but that's not the world we live in. We live in a world of pacing guides and moving through a lot of content in a semester. So giving them practical tools, using the same simple tools of, you know, digital recorders in very simple ways to encourage teachers to, very much like flipping the classroom, condense their lecture material, film that, and even do something as simple as using that as an efficient way of delivering the information in the class time, using the balance of the class time to challenge students to, again, record, publish, reflect on their work, and get the benefits of the same process that the teacher went through to create their content. And as a side note, one of the reasons I encourage teachers to film their content in this way, it's very rapid, very simple to create, but also it does a really great job at modeling the creative process for their students. A low barrier process where the students can see their teacher up on the screen with some whiteboards talking about this information, and the teacher can immediately turn around and say, you've seen me do it, I want you to do the same thing. And it's very challenging, rigorous, and that's where we want our teachers and students to be, I believe.
Well, I love that, because what it does is quickly makes the kids go, well, oh, now wait a second, if an old person can do it,
yeah,
you know, I can definitely
find out quickly, be like, this is actually really challenging, which is good. That's what we want. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Raise them to the level of you know, to getting it. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What was great was, I mean, you had the teachers so engaged. I mean, they're up dancing and they're filming and they're doing the drawings and they're explaining and they're using the whiteboards and ultimately participating in dancing to your song about Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I say dancing, but explaining using body language, right, and so forth. It is refreshing to see, because I can just, I mean, just having some of the conversations, I know that many of them, their brains are on fire as they're thinking about different ways they could use this in the classroom. So it's just kind of amazing. And I know it's neat, because when you walk in and you see teachers who have stayed to try and ask you questions, that's kind of going to be supportive to you in the, you know, the idea that they are going to move on and take this.
I actually paid them to stay.
Aha, okay.
You're coming back, and it's, you know, two or three of them, not over the top, you know.
That's impressive. I like that. That's planning for that. That's good.
Always plan ahead. But just real quick, one of the things that I'm additionally passionate about in my presentations is is modeling and how important it is. That's why you saw people up and dancing. That's why we created so much stuff today. And I'm just trying to practice what I preach, because today's session was many hours long. It was a full day. And I can say that I didn't do much of the work. I did facilitated
right.
modeling. And I'd show a video or show a piece of media or something and then immediately pass it off to the students and be like, tell me what you think. Do that formative assessment, however it looks like. I mean, the formative assessment that I used was, I think, is very powerful, but showing a short lecture video, 10-minute lecture video, on the content that I wanted to cover, and then challenging them to kind of summarize it in a different way, even in a differentiated way. I could give these students a chance to do something, give these students a different assignment, and then I can just walk around and just walk between their desks and look over their shoulder, see what they're creating on their whiteboard. It gives me a really great understanding of where they are and where I need to go next. Because otherwise, again, if I'm at the front of the room lecturing, I have very little understanding of how students are doing. And my visual or doing formative assessment by just kind of scanning the room or asking a hand-raising question is not extraordinarily effective. Many people think it is. It's
right.
just we all think that, oh, I'm really good at reading my students. maybe not. Maybe during certain activities. But that's really how I love to use formative assessment, is getting those whiteboards filled with information.
Oh, that's excellent. The one of the things that was really kind of cool was as you were explaining what they had, because you wanted them to critique the exercise using the whiteboards. And it was funny kind of watching the light bulbs come on as they started thinking about what you did. And you pretty much took them through all of these activities. They weren't just, you know, dancing and watching videos and stuff. They realized that, oh, my gosh, he's kind of tricked us into into learning this process, which would challenge, just like you explained, that you had given, you know, one group a little different of an assignment and stuff
right.
like that.
Like, I didn't know you did that with that group.
Yeah, they had no clue, and they're like, what?
Were they the smart group, or were we the smart group?
I noticed you didn't answer that question either.
No. And next slide, yeah.
But as a note, what was awesome about that is that you definitely did exactly what you're talking about. You modeled that idea that, yeah, you can do this in class. And then you gave them ideas in the classroom of working with those kids who are behind, or the ones who do cause the disruption. And you gave them real world examples of that. You know, I've said this several times, but I just got to, you know, give you a big pat on the back for that. Cause that is, that's the type of stuff that those takeaways that they go, you can't see me now, but I'm turning my head sideways. You're like, you go, aha, you know, the aha moments when I figured that out, you know. And so that's excellent.
And extending on what you just said in terms of my excellence. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, it's one of these things that I figured out a number of years ago about the modeling and how important that really is, because teachers spend a lot of time in their classroom doing their thing.
Right.
And which reinforces their teaching style, because as human beings, we have to say, well, I'm doing the right thing. I'm doing the correct things. And then I repeat and repeat and repeat. And then we go to like PLC or PLT meetings, and we talk about teaching, but we never see each other teach. And then, you know, we're supposed to go maybe observe other teachers in our first couple of years, but maybe that happens, maybe that doesn't. And if we do observe another teacher, it's usually for a couple of minutes, and then we have to go out and do something else. And then we go to professional development, and many times it's sitting and listening to somebody tell us what we should be doing. So really, since college, we never get to see people teach.
Right.
We get told, like, here's how you use this KWL chart, and here's how you use these 50 different internet tools, and here's how here's what they are, and here's some general ideas. But actually experiencing lessons as a student, I believe, is the core of making real change in teachers. They have to be able to go and not say, oh, I learned about 20 new websites. They need to be able to say, I felt what it was like to be a student using this particular thing, which I liked that feeling. It makes sense. It fits in my paradigm. It's very difficult to get people to change, but I think at the core of change has to be modeling. They have to see something, like it's human existence. You have to see something you want to be like.
Yes.
And then say, I like the way that made me feel. And you really can't get at that without modeling. You know, talking about something and then showing somebody something are two very different things.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.